Hello, this is Eileen with your pantograph dated Monday, March 2nd, 2020. We'll begin with the front page headline, Mayor, Time to Revisit Parking Impact Zone by Sierra Henry. Ordinance reducing on-street parking was approved in 2001. Normal. More than 20 years ago, Judy Scott's neighborhood near Linden and Oak Streets was choked with parked cars thanks to the neighborhood's proximity to the Illinois State University campus, and student housing. It wasn't safe for kids to go to the park because of all the cars, said Scott, now secretary and treasurer of the Neighbors Association of Normal. But after restrictions were put into place by the town, it's been good ever since then, at least on my block, she says. The town of Normal is revisiting the parking impact zone, as it's called, after more student housing was developed nearer to the campus and fewer students appear to be bringing their cars from home. The zone roughly spans the area between West Cypress and Hovey Streets and South Adelaide and Maple Streets. One downside of strict parking regulations is aesthetics, says town planner Mercy Davison. When you force all this parking, you end up with some really ugly buildings, she said. Housing development has slowed down over the years, but Mayor Chris Coos said the city council routinely receives requests from developers asking for variances to the parking rules. The drop in cars seems to be tied to more robust public transit system that caters to student apartment areas and ride sharing, such as Uber and Lyft. It wasn't always that way. Older neighborhoods. In 2001, the council approved a zoning ordinance that reduced on-street parking. The change required all new multiple-family housing developments provide one parking space for each bedroom. The rule was adjusted in 2008 to lower that requirement to 0.75 space per bedroom. Coos, then a new council member, said the goal of the parking impact zone was to tighten parking in residential areas. We knew there was going to be new development in the area, so it was to come up with some regulations, he said. Last month, after the council unanimously voted to approve a student housing development proposal that included 11 fewer parking spaces and less setback than zoning requires, Coos asked town staff to revisit the parking impact zone. The zone was born out of a study town staff conducted in the fall of 2000 after residents complained that they were unable to park near their own homes because of overcrowded on-street parking. There was parking in front of their house all day on the street, and some of the residents needed that parking for themselves, Coos said. That's what kind of drove it. A group tasked with studying the issue included council members, neighborhood groups, ISU staff and students, developers and landlords, the Planning Commission, and town staff. The task force said the problem pointed to insufficient campus parking that caused some students, commuters, and even ISU faculty and staff to park along residential streets near the campus, according to an action report presented to City Council in June 2001. That was a problem because many residential properties near campus were built in the early 1900s with single-car driveways and one-stall garages, and property owners parked on the streets. The task force recommended several options, including having developers plan for one parking space per bedroom for new development near campus. The town previously required one parking space for every apartment unit, including units with 3 and 4 bedrooms. Rules have changed. Over the years, council members have amended the ordinance and a handful of times. One in 2008 shortened parking space length to 17 feet from 20 feet. It also allowed stacked parking. The following year, council members reduced the required number of spaces from 1 space per bedroom to 3/4 of a space to bedroom. Coos doesn't expect the town will remove the parking requirements, but the council could vote to reduce the numbers or otherwise adjust it. Town staff are in the early stages of revisiting the ordinance, said Davison, and it's possible the town could survey students to find out how many bring their cars to campus. On-street parking remains an issue in certain neighborhoods near campus and uptown, particularly during events at Hancock Stadium, said Charles Alsbury, vice president of the Neighbors Association. But for other neighborhoods, the change has been positive. We definitely want it to remain this way in our area, Scott said. The next article is about the City Council. Normal to okay fiscal year 2020 budget by Sierra Henry. Normal. Normal residents will pay 90 cents more a month for water service if the Normal City Council approves a proposal for a 2% increase to town water rates Monday night. The increase would pay for improvements to the water system. The council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. Monday at Uptown Station with a public hearing on the final proposed spending plan for the fiscal year beginning April 1. If the water proposal is adopted, the average user will be a 90 cent increase starting in April. Some citizens are concerned about the increased water rate. We certainly understand that, said City Manager Pam Reese. What the additional revenue provides, though, is an opportunity to reinvest in the system. Since 2011, the city has spent $25 million to replace water mains and fire hydrants and improve the treatment plant. City Council members will hear about the proposed rate increase after on the proposed town budget, which is a little over $136 million. That proposal is about 9% higher than the budget for the current fiscal year, which ends March 31st. Town staff will have made only slight modifications to estimated review revenue and expenses since the new budget was proposed. A few things that have changed from the January work session to this final budget are that we've increased a few of our assumptions for revenue, said Reese. Income tax is coming a little higher than projected. The town is increasing its projected spending in contingency liability insurance, the Small Business Development Center, Workforce Development Program, Public Works Department, contractual services, and part-time salaries. The budget does not include any new programs. In other matters, the council will hear a proposal to establish a mortgage credit certificate program that allows the town to cede its private activity bond capacity to Monarch Mortgage Management. The capacity is based on population and annual per capita dollar amount established by the Internal Revenue Code. The program allows the town to work with Sand Creek Capital, which does business with Monarch Mortgage Management, to assist first-time home buyers. There's no risk to the community in terms of our bond authority or anything like that to serve as sponsoring agency, Reese said. The council also will take up several resolutions, including an agreement with Craig Onsrud for operation of the Ironwood Golf Course Pro Shop and private golf lessons, a contract with Davy Resource Group, not exceeding $41,978, to conduct a street tree inventory, and finally, a $224,840 contract with EZGO of Augusta, Georgia, for 70 electric golf carts with trade-in through the OMNIA Partners Joint Purchasing Program. Continuing with some local news, the headline is Leonard, Count Everyone. ISU professor discusses census by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. The official Illinois census count begins in less than a month, and officials say the margin for error. Bloomington. The official Illinois census count begins in less than a month, and officials say the margin for error is extremely low. According to the Illinois Complete Count Commission, there are several subpopulations of Illinois that are historically undercounted. Those groups include veterans, minorities, college students, foreign-born students, retirees spending summer in Illinois, farm families in rural counties, persons living in large housing complexes, children under the age of 5, and the homeless. That's not a surprise to Megan Leonard, an associate professor of politics and government at Illinois State University in Normal. Persons of color, the poor, rural Americans tend to be underreported, she said. It's not because of that. The reason is that when you consider the people who are hard to count, such as those that live in rural areas or experiencing homelessness or don't speak English as their first language. Sometimes they are people who aren't home much because they're working all of the time. Leonard was the featured speaker at a special session on the census Sunday at the Bloomington Public Library. The conditions that make you hard to count can lead to groups being undercounted, which can affect the distribution of political power and resources, she said. During her discussion with a group of interested citizens Sunday, Leonard hit on three major points on the importance of making sure every man, woman, and child in Illinois is counted. First, it's important for democracy because we use those numbers to locate the House districts and how many there are because we want to make sure that political power is correctly and evenly distributed, she said. The second reason is because of resources. The federal government gives out massive amounts of money. In Illinois, based on 16 programs that come directly from census numbers, it's about $1,500 per person from the federal government. Those programs include Medicare, Medicaid, WIC, Pell Grants, and many others. That covers everybody from the elderly to the youngest people to college students, so it's not just one group of people, she added. And thirdly, the government having accurate data is essential for those programs, but we also use the data for studying all sorts of social scientific things, she said. We learn how people make political decisions and how to make effective neighborhoods and many other things that matter. Every person living within the boundaries of the United States, regardless of their citizenship status, should be counted, Leonard said. An estimated 350 million people live in the United States. Even if they are undocumented, we count them because we want them to be represented in government, she added. Those that don't respond will have their census taker visit their home and all information will be kept confidential, she said. Census takers can be fined and jailed for releasing information, she said. Your information will be kept safe. They will take an oath to uphold and keep that information private. Census forms that will be mailed to households in April 1, and residents can respond through mail, the internet, or even through their cell phones, she said. On to some Monday memos. Wing contest to benefit PATH. Bloomington. A fundraiser to benefit PATH of McLean County is set for 3 to 6 p.m. March 21st at Dr. McKay's in Bloomington. Eat the Heat. Ain't no thing but a chicken wing charity thing. Ask contestants to eat 10 chicken wings of increasing heat level. Participants will ask observers for pledges for each level they complete. Justin M. Boyd of Country Financial has set a goal of $10,000. More information at the Eat the Heat Facebook page. Next, Downs Market seeks vendors. Downs. Downs Village Market is seeking produce vendors for the season. The market seeks vendors who offer locally grown and select regional produce, meat, poultry, eggs, and cheese, with appropriate health certification, plants and flowers, quality crafts and handmade items, and not-for-profit bake sales. For more information, go to villageofdowns.org, click on Village Market under Quick Links, or call 309-378-4396 or email marketmaster610@gmail.com. Pratt Offering Music Program, Bloomington. The Pratt Music Foundation is accepting applications for scholarships for piano and string lessons for students in grades 2 to 12. The scholarships to the Illinois Wesleyan University Music Preparatory Program for lessons in piano, violin, viola, and cello are awarded based on financial need, talent, and motivation. Applications are for the full academic year and are due on May 1. For an application or more information, email prattmusicfoundation@gmail.com or call 309-827-5534 or download an application at www.prattmusicfoundation.com. And Nazarene Church to install pastor. Bloomington. The Reverend Lindsay Stockham will be installed as lead pastor at Bloomington First Church of the Nazarene during the 10 a.m. service on March 8th at the church at 2207 North Tawanda Barnes Road in Bloomington. Most recently, she served at Bridgeway Community Church in Pekin as campus pastor since 2018 and as family ministries pastor and merge youth pastor. She completed her course of work at Nazarene Bible College in December 2019. Next, Habitat Team wins Lowe's Award, Bloomington. The Habitat for Humanity Women Build Team has been awarded a $5,000 grant from Lowe's for its work. Lowe's employees will also participate with the Women Build team on a two-day build during International Women Build Week. The team and Lowe's volunteers will hang siding for a home on Mason Street. And finally, Tiny House Raffle to benefit nonprofits. Bloomington. Mike Gilmore, a Central Illinois home builder and realtor, has built a 200-square-foot tiny house to be raffled off this year, with proceeds benefiting two local nonprofits. Gilmore has been involved with the nonprofits, Midwest Food Bank and Spread Truth Ministries, for several years. With some people desiring simpler living, Gilmore challenged himself to construct a tiny house with design efficiencies and innovative features. The house will be open for tours at Home Show 2020 from March 6th through 8th at the Interstate Center, 1106 Interstate Drive in Bloomington. Raffle tickets will go on sale in May, with the winning ticket drawn in September. 2,000 tickets will be for sale at a price of $75 each, or $195 for three tickets. From the Veterans Corner, Jerry A. Vogler, Sr. The U.S. Small Business Administration has announced that nonprofit organizations, state and local agencies, and institutions of higher learning are eligible to compete for funding of up to $300,000 to deliver entrepreneurship training to women in service members, women veterans, and women military spouses. Up to six awardees receive a total of $300,000 in grants administered by SBA's Office of Veterans Business Development to participate in the Women Veteran Entrepreneurship Training Program. The fund will cover the costs of educating women service members and veterans, as well as women military spouses who are interested in starting or currently own a small business. Eligible organizations should submit applications through grants.gov. Submission deadline is March 17 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight. Here's a question. I am a 30-year-old veteran who recently enrolled in the VA healthcare system. I understand there are smartphone apps that will provide information. How do I access this information? And the answer, the VA has apps for smartphones. www.myhealth.va.gov is the primary VA healthcare app. The app covers a wide variety of healthcare issues, including prescription refills, how to send a secure message to your healthcare team, schedule and view your appointments, view your lab and test results, and many more. The site also allows you to apply for VA health care. The site also allows you to check your claims for service-connected disability compensation, view your payment history, upload evidence to support your claim, file for VA disability upgrades, and file a claim for compensation. The site has detailed information about education benefits, records, family member benefits, burial and memorials, career and employment, housing assistance, pensions, and life insurance. mobile.va.gov/app/rx-refill is an app for prescription medications. This app allows you to request a refill, view VA prescription information, view images of your VA medications, view additional VA prescriptions in your package, see past shipments of VA prescriptions, review VA prescription history, and access additional medication information on My Health Vet. Here's another question. Did you know? The VA is closely monitoring the outbreak of the coronavirus. The Center for Disease Control is working with the World Health Organization and other government agencies to respond. The VA recommends taking a few practical steps to protect yourself and your loved ones. Get a flu shot. Wash your hands often with soap and warm water for at least 20 seconds. Use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze with a disposable tissue, not with your hands, and dispose of the tissue in the trash and clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces like doorknobs, countertops, light switches, etc. And finally, did you know? Livingston County has a truly fine war museum located at 321 North Main Street in Pontiac. The museum is free to the public. Exhibits include military uniforms, weapons, displays, books, and videos from World War I to the present. The museum has used Skype in the classroom to connect veterans with students with live video chats in over 250 classrooms around the world. The Livingston County War Museum site on YouTube features many videos and interviews with veterans. The museum is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sunday, noon to 4 p.m. And here's some Social Security information by Elaine Popejoy. Social Security is here with information, tools, and benefits to help you secure today and tomorrow. Our journey together begins when you're born and get your Social Security card. It continues when you get your first job and follows you through your entire career, marriage, and retirement. Our commitment is to be with you throughout life's journey. Our promise extends to surviving family members when a worker dies. Some of the Social Security taxes you pay go to survivors' benefits for your family. In the event of your death, certain members of your family may be eligible for survivors' benefits. These include widows and widowers, divorced widows and widowers, children, and dependent parents. The amount of benefits your survivors receive depends on your lifetime earnings. The higher your earnings are, the higher their benefits will be. The value of your survivor's benefits may be more than the value of your individual life insurance. By making sure your earnings are posted correctly, you are passing down protection to your survivors just as your parents did before you. You can do this by creating a personal My Social Security account at www.socialsecurity.gov/myaccount. Your personal My Social Security account is secure and gives you immediate access to your earnings records, Social Security benefit estimates, and printable Social Security statement. Visiting our Benefits Planner for Survivors to help you better understand your and your family's Social Security protection as planned for your financial future at www.socialsecurity.gov/planners/survivors. We're going to take a break now with part one of the pantograph from March 2nd, 2020. Come back.